Mishy-mashy Monday. It's the news, according to me. Good Monday morning, October 20th, 8:46 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Coming to you from the home studio in my home. My squishy squish home studio. We had a torrential rain here apparently while I was gone. I think it was Sunday morning. Apparently, we get a certain kind of rain out of a certain direction. We get a certain amount of water in our basement. And it's actually kind of chilly here this morning. I don't know what the temperature is outside. It's 42 degrees because our furnace is actually running. I don't know if you can hear that in the background or not, but it is rumbling away. It's trying to catch up. Fairly chilly here last night. We are getting ready to head out today to go to Red Rocks, Colorado, and we're going to be going to a concert there tomorrow night. We're going out today. Tomorrow night there's a concert. It's formerly Brooke Fraser. I think her name is now Brooke Litterwood. Yeah. She had a really good name for, just for marketing purposes. And now it's, I don't know. I don't know how you do that. What is it? Brooke. Let's see if I can find it here. Brooke. Liggertwood. Yeah, her and somebody else is going to be there. Some guy named Chris Tomlin is also going to be there. I think he's on tour with them. He's trying to get started, this whole thing. We have, he's going to be there. And Brooke just happens to be there, formerly Brooke Fraser. She's mostly with Hillsong United. However, she's kind of stepped away from that franchise. I call it a franchise. It is a business. I think she's started to realize that. That's the one thing Tomlin, he's kind of been his own thing. The whole Passion Work Network thing has been different than the typical. In fact, what's really interesting is just, I went to a Casting Crowns event one time. This guy's got some concert, I guess you would call it that. And Matt Redman showed up at the thing, and he was on stage and they were doing some worship at the end. And you never know when Redman's going to show up somewhere. There have been a couple different places I've been to a couple concerts I've been to that where he just shows up. He's independent. He's not a part of any marketing production machine, and he just does stuff. And it's kind of cool to see somebody operate that way. But the industry, for a while, CCM was a big deal, and there were people that saw the market potential behind it. So they were certainly the big producers. They get these guys locked into contracts and do all kinds of things with them, and it was quite interesting how it would happen, the way they would get them locked in. They'd make their money. Of course, the producers are the ones that make money. That the artists rarely get, they don't even get half of the money that comes in. They get these producers, they put them on tour, they sign a deal, record contract, and they produce their show, and then they go out and take that show on the road. It has to be marketable. It has to be transferable to the stage. So they have to do that. Then, typically, what ends up happening throughout all of that is they end up with a whole lot of they lock them into things. And it's really very sad. Actually, Then of course, what happens ends up happening is they they ask them to, you know, they got to keep their contract going, so they got to produce an album every year, or sometimes two. Whatever they do, they produce the music and they keep on stay on tour to keep on making. You know, that's how they make their money. They get them locked into this whole thing, and they basically control them. So in my cup, which is the only thing that has control on me, is my cup. I have my chai with my Almond Joy creamer. And of course, in my backup cup, I've kind of wrestled with. I've got very little sweet peach tea left, and I was gonna make some more, but I'm gonna be gone, so I kind of didn't want to have to lug that around the country. So I ended up just pouring out some apple cider. It's good stuff. It's very tart stuff, but it's good. I have anyway. This whole thing with the production thing is. One of the things that Tomlin and Redman, some of the others that were involved in Passion, they were able to avoid that process. I think one or two of them ended up going into the production market scene. CCM was a big deal. It was produced. Amy Grant, Michael J.W. Smith, they're just honey. A lot of those people were just they were locked into. Even some of the Christian rock artists. Striper, some of those people, they were locked into this contract world for a long time. Some of them, Randy Stonehill, I think, was able to avoid that. He didn't do a circuit with a production company. I think he did maybe a couple of years, and he kind of got away from it. Of course, he couldn't keep it going because you have to produce yourself. You have to be able to get your own book, do your own booking. It's kind of like the book deals that people do. They'll sign a book deal and they're required to do a tour to sell the book and sign book signings and all that stuff. Those people don't come up with that all them. They don't get sit on the phone and start calling all kinds of bookstores and telling them where they want to go. You know, invite them coming in just to do a book signing. That's all done by the marketing agency, the production agency. So the same thing has happened to the world of music, of course. And of course, there's the big producers that are not believers at all. Some of them, most of them are not even nominally Christians at best. And they get them locked into this. It's all about the money. That's what it boils down to. And so they use them as their little puppets. So what ends up happening, the same thing is happening now with, you know, a lot of the worship music that's out there. There were some organizations, some church groups that actually, like Hillsong actually has their own production company. I know that there was another company, it was out of Australia, or another church organization, actually had musicians on staff, and they actually ended up having, they actually wrote their own songs for their services. They would find out what the message is going to be about, and they actually wrote songs, you know, like that. So they had actually a songwriting team, was part of their worship team, and they would write these songs. They'd spend a week, you know, writing a couple songs about the message, and it was they were constantly putting out songs. But they produced them themselves. Of course, they were just for their church. So then they started getting popular. They started doing more stuff outside of that. I think Elevation Worship was actually kind of spawned out of that. I think that's where they kind of came from. But in the meantime, you end up you know, it's not that there's anything wrong with the songs themselves necessarily, but the people, you know, that get trapped into that whole thing because they're making money, because it becomes popular, people are buying the songs, they're streaming them, whatever they're doing. And of course that whole thing gets backed up by the finances of the people who want to produce their, you know, make money. They want to step in. Of course they can, the problem is they have the market. They can take your song from, you know, maybe you might make, you know, I've put songs on iTunes. I've put songs on, I put songs out there. Had a whole, I think, about eight songs that we put out on this one particular album, collection of songs. And we had, me and another guy wrote some songs. He wrote the words, I put the music to it. And it was, we did this whole thing. It's kind of his, but you know, it was just kind of his bucket list type thing. I kind of helped him out with it. And then we got that done. Well, then we put that all on iTunes. And we you know, we made probably a total of maybe $27. With all that, probably something like it. And we did a couple tours around the local area with the songs, and it was kind of fun. It was kind of a fun deal, but we didn't have a production. You know, if you go from that, you know, trying to scratch by, trying to make, you know, have your music kind of carry you through life, making a living doing it as a career, and then you try to scratch that out, and then somebody, you know, comes up to you and says, "Hey, well, you sign a deal. We're gonna give you, you know, six figures, or you know, maybe not even six figures, but initially because you're an unknown. We're gonna put you on tour with XYZ with this company, with this other person over here, whatever. And you're gonna get to be, you know, be known by getting out there with them, and we're gonna pay you this amount of money, and we're gonna sell your records." That's what happens. You don't go out there and look for venues yourself as a band. You're not making the phone calls. It's all set up with the middlemen, the people behind the scenes, middlemen and middlewoman. Got to include those women in on this greediness. It's not just greedy men; it's greedy women too. And they get involved in the whole thing, and so it becomes this whole thing of money. Anyway, so it's a very slippery slope trap type thing. And I probably would have fell into it if I'd have been good enough to make it happen. Anyway, the quite a few things to talk about. There's by the way, I guess we have no kings in the country now because of the protest. They stopped it. They stopped the king from happening because they had a no kings protest, and it was extremely effective because now we have no kings. Thank goodness they did that. Donald Trump kind of trolled the whole thing. He said, "I heard that there's an attempt for some kind of a king to take over. I appreciate them doing that because, you know, as their president, I appreciate them doing that to keep the king from taking over the country." And he basically pretty much trolled them. You know, it was an opportunity in most cases, and of course they're saying that millions of people showed up for the No Kings protests. This was just a grassroots thing that just sprung from the roots of the ground. Just you know, nothing was organized, nobody was paid, no money was spent on this. It was just all people just jumping in and protesting the king. This guy who wants to be the king. He's a dictator. He's an autocracy. It's autocracy. Yeah, there's a lot of money being sloshed around. There's some people who did some investigative reporting and kind of got into. There's one guy that I don't know what his name is. I saw the video. Just happened to pop up on some stuff I was looking at and happened to dig kind of into this. And this guy's little video popped up. It was actually quite telling. Let's see if I can find it here. My internet's a little slow this morning. Not going to have a real long show this morning, by the way. It's going to be fairly small. And by the way, feel free to call the show, 812-379-8778. You can call or text the show. You'll have to leave a message, of course, and... Where's it at here? I don't remember what I was even going to talk about. It was quite interesting. Yeah, I don't see it here. I just saw it this morning. I don't know what it was. I'll get rid of that. Yeah, you can watch that. I don't remember where it's at. It's just interesting to see what was going on here with this whole King's thing, and the lack of people that showed up. This guy was doing this investigative reporting stuff, and he was finding out that, here it is, it's right here. His name is Nate Friedman. I don't think I subscribed to him, do I? Maybe I do. Maybe I do subscribe to that guy. Yeah, I guess I must. It was not doing very many videos. He gets involved in some of the inner circles of some of this stuff, and the people who were actually having their briefings and doing all their stuff, and the what they call they're called the moderators or whatever they're called. They help direct traffic. They don't work for the city. They don't work with the police department. They work with directing flow and directing people and telling them what to do. They wear these little orange vests and they get people to march around and they kind of direct where everybody goes. They are absolutely paid, 100%, on staff. Now, there's all these NGOs, these non-government organizations, that get funding and to the tunes of millions of dollars. And so they use that funding. Of course, they'll put up, these organizations will put up little websites that look like grassroots, you know, so you can donate to the organization. They might raise $80,000 or something, but it makes it look like it's a grassroots organization that people are donating to. And of course, that money then sloshes around. It goes different places, but most of these NGOs get a whole bunch of money. They get lots of money. Now those NGOs can also donate to PAC groups. They can donate to campaigns. They can put up. No, they can get political. They can get involved with slogans. They can say things, and they don't necessarily get behind a particular candidate. This is where they get really tricky. They get behind certain talking points, or the slogan rhetoric, or the slogans that somebody might use, like, you know, I'm with her, that type thing. They'll get behind that, and they'll produce those signs. They'll produce all kinds of things. They get millions of dollars going into those things, and they can produce those things, and then they can donate whatever they do, or they can donate the services and whatever they, you know, advertising, whatever they have that helps to point people towards a particular candidate or a particular party, which is normally the Democrat Party, not the Democratic Party. It's amazing to me how that has been adopted. I know I'm beating a dead horse and you've heard this a million times. Go back in history, if you can, and try to find anything in the 70s or 80s or even into the 90s, and I would say the early part of the century, and try to find anybody saying the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party. That has just been a phenomenon that's just been growing in the last 20 years. It was the Democrat Party. Because everybody kind of understood we didn't have a democracy. Now, they all talked about the democracy. They all said, oh, this is a democracy. We've got a democratic process. And it is the Democratic National Committee. That is their name, the Democratic National Committee. However, it's like the saying the Republican National Committee, whatever, you know, conference or whatever they call themselves. It's the difference between a Republican and democracy. And but they're not democratic. Look at the last couple of elections, presidential elections. What kind of democratic process did they use to choose their presidential candidates? How's that working out for them? And now we have the situation in Virginia, which is very interesting. The Virginia issue is that there's this guy who was, it's been several years ago, but the text just recently got kind of uncovered, accidentally got sent to somebody, I think, how it happened. And he was saying some very ridiculously terrible things. He must be the attorney general, I think, in Virginia. And I don't understand, the attorney general's, or the not the attorney general, the what is it, attorney general? Attorney, I guess it is. He made some very disgusting comments, and it was just like hideous, violent type stuff. And this is now when I think of fascism, I think of someone who. And dictatorship and everything else and the autocracy. When I think of that, I think of a regime that stifles any kind of free speech, that stifles anybody that disagrees with them, and it stifles anybody who has anything to say. And one of the things that recently was said, and this is aside from everything else I've talked about this morning, like I said, it's Mishmash Monday. I can just let my brain go and we can just go down all kinds of bunny trails. And here I go down another one. I can't remember who the guy is that said it. I know it's, I have it on video and I wish I could find it. The statement was made, and this guy was very passionate in what he was saying. He said, when these people start to come out and say things, we can't debate them. We have to delete them. In other words, we have to eliminate them. He was talking about, yeah, snuffing them out, stuffing the life out of them. That's what he's talking about. That's fascism. You don't debate them, you delete them. That's what you do with fascists. No, that's what fascists do. Fascists will delete you. They're the ones who will eliminate you from the planet. We don't know those kind of, people around. There was this guy, there was this lady being interviewed during one of the, I think it was one of the larger ones. It might have been New York, where they were having a No Kings deal going on, And they ended up having this lady who seemed very nice. She seemed very nice. And she said, talk about, oh, I'm a nice lady. But then she said something about, well, how do you feel about Charlie Kirk? Are you upset about that? No, I'm happy. Hitler's dead. I'm happy about Hitler being dead. Hello? What? So she was celebrating the fact that Charlie Kirk had been killed, assassinated. There are still people out there who are just, they love the fact that happened to them. There's people, they're marching around in some of these demonstrations, some of these protests that they're calling them, the riots that they're having. And they're putting their little finger up to their neck, like a gun thing, up to their neck and push, and, you know, making their thumb go down like it's the trigger to, you know, they're shooting themselves in the neck. They're chanting, you know, pretty bad things. Now, I think there was a hunting blind of some kind set up near where President Trump gets off of his Air Force One, someplace in I think it might have been in Florida. And it was a place where nobody hunts. I mean, it was in the middle of a residential area, whatever it was. It was kind of there's no hunting in that area. I guess the police or somebody, the FBI, Secret Service, somebody found this. It was within line of sight of where the president gets off his plane. And yet the Democrats still, to this day, refuse to come out and condemn and try to stifle the rhetoric. They would just love it if somebody would off the president. They would love it. They're walking around with T-shirts that say 8647. James Comey. Hey, I found this on the beach. Kind of neat. Might mean something political. Not sure. This is the way you say. This is what you do when you want to get something out there and pretend like you're stupid about it. Oh, I didn't realize it was I didn't realize what it meant. I didn't have any. He knew exactly what it meant. Now, I guess he came out and put out some kind of a video. He's in some trouble. So is John Bolton. John Bolton has been arraigned. I think he has 8 counts against him, I believe. Not right. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I am in no way stating that I know anything about anybody's guilt. I'm not. If I say anything accidentally that implies guilt, I am sorry. I'm presuming someone is innocent until they are proven guilty. I'm just going to put that disclaimer out there right now. Everyone is presumed to be innocent, and it's all allegations at this point until they are proven so. But some of these people have said themselves, that just like this whole the whole deal where James Comey gave classified information, or at least it was at the very least confidential information. It was information that never should have been in the public eye. His notes about a meeting with the president. Now, here's the problem with this. We get one side, one man's notes. We get his side of what happened in that Oval Office meeting. President Trump didn't say anything about it, other than the fact that he fired him a few weeks later. So Comey, Mr. Ethical, the above reproach man that he is, because he teaches ethics at Cambridge or whatever it was he used to teach. I think he was an adjunct professor at Cambridge, I believe. He was teaching ethics there. So, of course, he's above reproach. He knows all about ethics. Well, unfortunately, sometimes people like that know their way around. They know the loopholes, which is what he was trying to do here. And he says it very plainly. He's admitted to doing some very shady things and thinks it's funny. Like, he's so smart. He's the smartest guy in the room. I've known people like this before. I think they're so smart. I can outwit every. They think when they walk in the room, they think they're the smartest person. Now he's very tall, and he's freakishly, creepishly tall. And you know, so when he's walking around, I'm sure he always feels like everyone's below him, beneath him, whatever it is, because he looks down on everyone, literally. He always feels like his little minions are around him. It has a psychological effect on people. I'm convinced of that. People who are really tall like that. Anyway, so thinking that he's above reproach and he can get away with anything, he basically said he said it several times in public. I gave this information to a friend of mine, someone who was on his staff or whatever, I don't know who it was, an informant or whoever it was, an asset to give to the media. He wasn't going to give it directly because he didn't feel that was right, but he gave it to someone else to give to the media. Give to the press. This is a trick that they've been. I guarantee this isn't the first time he's done that. It just happened to be in this case he did it that way. How he injected himself into the 2016 election with the whole Hillary Clinton thing because the Attorney General at that time. What was her name? I can't remember what her name was. How she was. I got it on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember what it is. She absolved herself from it because of her close relationship with the Clintons, so she took herself out of it and wouldn't get involved with it. Well, then, time for some chai. So Comey stepped in to do what she should have done. And of course, he got involved with meddling with the whole thing. He kind of went rogue and did his thing. And of course, nobody pushed back on him about it. There was a time when some of the Democrats were coming out. Maxine Waters, for example, came out and said, James Comey has lost all credibility. And she stomps away. Goes to the microphone, says that, and she stomps away. Because he basically said something bad about Hillary Clinton. He came out and acknowledged that she had done all this stuff. After he admitted that she did all these, committed all these crimes and did all these things that she shouldn't have done, all these illegal actions that she had taken, it had taken place, he then ties it all up in a bow and says, no reasonable prosecutor would ever bring any charges against her. He just kind of puts the whole thing in a box and says, nobody's going to touch that. He was the first person in this whole process that said, who will rid me of this menacing priest or whatever it is. The statement that was, I think, said by some king who said something about who will rid me of this menacing priest or monk or whatever the guy was. Well, then somebody went out and killed the priest, thinking that that's what the king wants. His king is telling me he wants the priest killed. That's what he's doing. They're doing this all the time. Now he accused Trump of saying that. He accused Trump of giving that he was the one. He was the priest. Comey thought he was the priest, and Trump was saying that this guy's bad. He's bad. Oh, he was thinking that he was going to get himself killed because someone was going to in absentia, whatever. I don't know if that word's applicable there, but he was trying to get someone else to take care of this problem for him. Comey was the problem, and he thought he would. Say something. And that's what he accused Trump of saying that. Well, that's not what was going on there. Comey and the Democrats, many of the Democrats, have been filling that role of saying, you know, Trump he's Hitler, he's a Nazi, he's a fascist, he's a king, he's trying to, you know, he's an authoritarian. Autocracy he's trying to put in place. It's oligarchy. everything that's evil you could, that you can come up with. And he's basically the enemy. He's the evil one. Of course, that's what they just keep, you know, going on with this whole thing. To the point where, at some point, someone is going to think that they're, that these people will think that they're heroes saving the country by doing what they're doing. And they're going to try to go out and off the president. It's just a matter of time before an attempt is done, before an attempt is made. And of course, then they will rejoice over, they'll quietly and silently to themselves, they'll be happy about it. Like, much like the whole Charlie Kirk thing. Nobody will really come out and condemn or be sad about anything that happens. It is absolutely, shockingly pathetic. Right now, the Dems, they've lost this case. I think it was Gavin Newsom. Lost this case, I believe, with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's wrapped, you know, they're wrapped around Trump's finger. I got news for you. And there's, you know, there's still 3 years left here. There's probably going to be another Supreme Court justice that has to step down or, you know, passes away or whatever ends up happening in the next 3 years. It's very possible. Trump may get another pick. What is that, number five now? Four or five? I think four. This would be number four. Let's see, it was Kavanaugh. What's her name? And then the other guy. So there's been three so far, I think. It's going to be four. Yep. Clarence Thomas might retire, might step down, possibly. And of course, that'll give Trump an opportunity to place him before the term leaves. I wouldn't be surprised. Now, I don't know. He's the one guy that I would him and, is it Alito? I think it's Alito. Between those two, those are kind of our biggest advocates. Amy Coney Barrett is a little questionable. We have, on some issues, she's great. Other issues, not so much. In the meantime, they've just made some rulings here on some of this voting stuff, some of this gerrymandering stuff. They call it gerrymandering, something else. So they're trying to get this deal. Of course, Newsom has come out and said that we're going to do the same thing they're doing down in Texas. They fired the first shot in Texas. No, the Democrats have been doing this for millennia. For the last 40 years, they've been doing this whole thing where they draw the lines, they make the voting stuff according to, they fool with the census. They mess with the census because they rig the numbers. They've been finding all kinds of things, all kinds of shenanigans have been going on with the census numbers, let alone the migrants that are here, the illegal immigrants that are here, who are included in the census, which changes the numbers for representation. This is why they were flying them around to different parts of the country, plopping them down in certain areas. People were asking, well, why are they doing? Why are they dropping them into red states? Well, it's because it offsets the census thing. And that's the whole point of the whole thing, because they can count different numbers, they can do play with different things, and they mess with the districts that people vote in. And so they're not based on just territorial; they're based on, you know, demographics. They've been doing this for years, and now they claim, oh, now the Republicans are doing that. Well, they're not. They're actually correcting some things that were done by the Democrats down in Texas, making it a little bit more even-handed and a little bit more fair. When you have 48% of the people in California, supposedly, or at least they were, 48% of the people in California were Republicans, and you only have like 10 representatives that are, or maybe what was it, three representatives that are, yeah, I think it was three representatives that are Republicans. It's ridiculously disproportionate. So now Gavin Newsom comes out and says he's going to reap. They're going to do the same thing here in California. Now there's this thing called something Arnold Schwarzenegger put into place. Arnold Schwarzenegger. He put that into place. This whole thing about an independent council would decide where the districts went. Independent of any kind of political thing. It was just a. And Schwarzenegger was very big about that. And he's actually been interviewed about this in recent days. And saying that this new, I think it's Prop 50 that's taking it away. They're going to vote on this thing called Prop 50, which is going to change, it's going to put it back in the hands of the politicians to decide where the districts go. So whatever group is in charge at the time, which is going to be the Democrats in California, they can decide what's going to happen so even though this independent council, which isn't that independent, by the way, that's why they're still all screwed up out there. They're not going to be able to change much. They've already pretty much gerrymandered the whole thing. And of course, in Illinois, it's terribly that way. There's all kinds of weird district stuff going on there. And it's always around population of big cities. Now, when you start piling people together, there's this weird phenomenon that starts to happen. It's kind of like the whole experiment of the rats having everything that they need and what ends up happening to them. There's no life struggle. You just become a different kind of person. And or maybe it's just those kinds of people that want to be like that. I don't know which is first. I don't know whether the city affects you or whether you affect the city. I'm not sure if you were that way before and then because you gravitate. It's just kind of like Lot's wife. I guess that's the only thing I can think of is, she looks back longingly at what, you know, she becomes a pillar of salt. I'm not sure exactly what all was going on there. I'm sure some of my friends probably know better than I do. I haven't really looked into that whole story very well, what it all means. I'm sure there's a lot more deeper meaning than what I understand. But to me, it just seemed like it was, of course, the easy life of living in the city and everything that happens there. And of course, I think there's so much ungodliness that happens when you pile people together like that. Because it makes things easier, but it also makes evil easier as well. Has an effect on people. I am all over the place today, I tell you. It's kind of a fun show. Never know where I'm going to go next. This little sinus thing happening. I'm not sure what's going on. Usually this time of year, when the weather changes, going from into fall, kind of the fall, winter season, my sinuses start acting up. And then coming out of winter, going into spring, my sinuses kind of do something weird. The rest of the year, not so much. Yeah, so I have, it'll be interesting to see what happens, what unfolds here the next few weeks, and few months throughout the rest of this year. I think in the next 6 months are going to be very telling in terms of what happens. Look at it this way. We're only, 9 months into the current presidency. And the left is freaking out. I think that they're going to have a really hard time in midterms, in my opinion. I think the Democrats are going to be, it's not going to be a blue wave. Let's just put it that way. They may not even take the House. They may not take the Senate. They may not take anything. They could end up losing seats in both. This thing with the SCOTUS, with the Supreme Court of the United States, the SCOTUS, with these decisions that they've made, could potentially make it very difficult for the Democrats to make it through this whole thing. Because basically what they're saying is there's states can, you know, I don't know what the whole ruling was. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is it's ruining their attempts. It's kind of a setback with the whole thing. What Gavin Newsom tried to do with the suing Texas or suing whatever kind of lawsuit he had going on. He lost the suit basically. So we'll see what happens with this. The deal with Virginia, with this guy and the text that he made. Now this lady who's running for governor did not step up and condemn him. She didn't. She and he basically came out and said he was held accountable for what he said. He He had no accountability. He's still running for office. Even after the things he said, and then he wants to be the head, you know, kind of the head attorney, basically the top law cop, basically, of the state. What I don't understand about this, and I was going to get into this a little earlier. I think I got sidetracked somehow, believe it or not. And the he said something about he's going to help with affordable housing and affordable this. By the way, that is a talking point. They're discovering some of these key words that they're coming up with. These are all come up with. They all have organizations, think tank groups that come up with these words that mean nothing. Mamdani now is if you listen to all of his little talking points, he always says everything with a smile on his face. He's always got this big smile on his face. Anyway, we're going to do this. We're going to make housing affordable. We're going to make this affordable. We're going to make food affordable. We're going to make on and on and on. We're going to make living easier for everybody. We're going to make just like this whole thing with Bernie Sanders the other day, saying we have the richest nation on earth, and it's ridiculous that we can't afford health care. Well, Bernie, there's a reason why are we the richest nation on earth? I would. It has nothing to do with healthcare. Basically, it has something to do with open market, free market society. We are not a democratic socialist, government. We don't have democratic socialism. If we did, we would not be the richest nation on earth. When he says democratic socialism, they really mean communism. They're talking about communism. Mamdani was caught by saying something about, the holy grail of, seizing the means of production. That's the holy grail. That's their ultimate goal. Seizing the means of production. That is communism. I think communism is, as a form of government, as a form of living, you can decide to be in a commune. You can live communally with other people. There's nothing evil about that. When it's forced upon you as a governmental entity, when communism becomes the overruling power, the people in charge of the communism are the problem in the whole situation because they become corrupted. It becomes ultimate power, and it becomes ultimately corrupts. And that's but it's the people who are on top of that. It'll be the Bernie Sanders, the AOCs, the people who want to be at the top of that piggy pile. And they are, I'm convinced, they believe that it's going to be a utopian society for everyone because everyone just has everything they need. You will own nothing and you will be happy. You just go through life like everybody else. Everybody will have everything that they need. Everybody just is assigned a job to do and you just do that job and everybody does their thing and everybody just jumps in and contributes and everything is taken care of. Everybody gets an iPhone. Everybody gets See, that's not the way it works. When you take away competitiveness, then of course the government decides who's going to be in charge of the businesses that make the iPhone. They're going to be in charge of who makes the decisions of who's in charge of your health care, who the doctors are, This already is happening, folks. This is already happening in our society. It's social engineering is happening anyway. When they make decisions about who's going to make it, who's going to get the money or the funding or who's going to make it into certain colleges, universities for whatever studies that they do, when you have those people and they start having quotas, they start doing the DEI thing, they start doing all that. Well, now you've got people who are shoved. They're no longer merit. It's no longer meritocracy. It's no longer a merit-based system. So the harder you work and the more you try to achieve and you get up to that point where it's everybody gets a trophy kind of mentality, but we're going to decide who gets to be at the end. We're going to decide regardless of based on your skin color. It's all basically what it's all about. It's all about skin color, which is just again, it's just racism on a different level, a different flavor. There's a lady the other day that was being accused, I think she was on, might have been on Pierce Morgan's show. So this black lady, she was, they were So one lady was accusing her. There's another person on the panel. She was accusing her of being racist. And she said, I can't be racist. I'm a black woman. So I guess if you're a black woman, you can't, if you're black, this idea that if you're black, you can't be racist. You absolutely can be. Well, I have institutional power. Well, then you've redefined what racism is. Racism is in your heart. It has nothing to do with an institution. Are there first of all, show me the documents that exist on file on today. Show me the documents today that say you are racially prejudiced against, show me what they are. In your county, in your city, what is it that define you as a minority that gives you fewer rights or that discriminates against you? Show me where that's at. Well, it's just in the well, then it's not an institutional problem. It's a problem with people. That's happening. If it really is happening. Stephen Crowder asked a really good question, because why is it that the Chinese were basically slaves in this nation too, worked on the railroads mostly out west. They were basically slaves. You don't see them asking for reparations. You don't see them it's Japanese people were put in intern camps during World War II. They don't ask for reparations. The Indian people are minorities in this country, and I don't see them. They're some of the highest achievers in this country. What is it? I believe it is a part of a culture. The race baiting class, the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, and now, of course, there's other groups that are doing it now on a much more covert level. All in the name of socialism and everything else that are putting all this stuff together with. Now, folks, I didn't realize I've been yakking for the last hour, probably just saying a whole lot of topical stuff that needs to be kind of drilled down on. But let me know what you think about what I think, about what all the things I've touched on. What do you want me to talk about this week? I don't know if there's going to be a show tomorrow. Very possibly will not be a show tomorrow morning. I will be in Denver, Colorado tomorrow morning is where I'll be waking up. I don't know that there's going to be a possibility for me to do a show, only because I'll be in a hotel room and it's a little bit difficult to do a show there. So if I have a show, it'll be very, very short. We'll see how it goes. I have... That's a possibility. Now, it's Wednesday morning, there might be a show. But again, I have to be up and at them because I'm going to try to get out of Denver to get back home. If I do have a show, it may be late on Wednesday. And it might be a live show later on Wednesday. It depends on what time I get home. The other possibility is then Thursday, of course, Thursday morning. I'm hoping to have a show Thursday morning. It'll be a very early show, probably not very long. And then Friday morning, where will I be Friday morning, I wonder? Maybe I should look and see. It might be a possibility that there will be a show on Friday morning. I don't know. Friday morning, probably going to be a show. Most likely going to be in Fayetteville. Yeah, Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'll be in Fayetteville, Arkansas again. No, I take that back. I'll be in El Paso, I guess. Yeah, going to be in El Paso on Friday morning. I end up in Fayetteville Friday night. So I'll end up El Paso, Texas. It looks like I'll be able to do a show there that morning. So there you go. We have lots of things going on, including lots of chai being drank. Anyway, I will... I'm going to leave you with that for the rest of this week. Just big, happy top of the week to you. Anyway, it's, again, Monday, October 20th. That's the way the news is. Let me know what you think about what I think. 812-379-8778. Call or text the show. You can get on google.com/voice. You can also type in there, type a message to me at that number. Just type that number in. 812-379-8778. Leave a text message or a voicemail. I might play your voicemail online if you leave one. Maybe. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how it works out. Anyway, in the meantime, sorry for all the, just going down every like five different topics at once here this morning. But that's the way it works here on this show. And tomorrow, the Topical Tuesday, I try to stay with more on, one or two topics. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week. I will talk to you hopefully tomorrow. If not, see ya.